This is the Talk of Iowa Book Club. I'm Charity Nebbe. A Sand County Almanac was published in 1949, but the words of Aldo Leopold seem to become more powerful with time. From Aldo Leopold's boyhood in Burlington, Iowa, his work as a forester in New Mexico, and the time he spent on that famous Sand County farm, on this episode, we'll learn about the life and work of Leopold and the enduring power of a Sand County Almanac. Pull up a comfy chair. It's time for Book Club.
If you love books and this podcast, join IPR's Talk of Iowa Book Club Facebook group. You can ask Charity what she's reading for work or for fun, get inside information about upcoming book club episodes, answer questions to shape our book club discussions, and find other like-minded readers to share observations and recommendations with. Join our community of readers in IPR's Talk of Iowa Book Club Facebook group.
This is the Talk of Iowa Book Club. I'm Charity Nebbe. We've been reading A Sand County Almanac, written by environmentalist Aldo Leopold. The almanac gives us a month-by-month description of life on a failed farm in Wisconsin that Leopold bought, restored, and studied. The almanac is usually published along with some other selections of Leopold's writing, and his ideas have shaped the environmental movement in powerful ways. This hour, we will talk about this important work with some expert readers, wildlife biologist Jim Pease and Sylvia Secchi, an environmental economist at the University of Iowa. But we're going to start with Curtis Miney. He is a senior fellow at the Aldo Leopold Foundation and a Leopold biographer. He is here to help us understand who Aldo Leopold was. Hello, Kurt.
Good morning, Charity, and I'm so pleased to be with you today.
Well, it's wonderful to have you here. And I mentioned earlier that Aldo Leopold grew up in Burlington, Iowa. And so, of course, we claim him as one of our native sons. And we want to talk about his work as an adult. But that boyhood in Burlington and the surrounding area really did help to shape him. How was that?
Oh, boy, yeah, you can't imagine Leopold having become who he became without his roots right there in southeast Iowa along the Mississippi River. And I'd summarize it, I guess, by saying both in terms of the place itself, being along the big river and exploring in his boyhood the nooks and crannies, the river bottoms and the bluffs along the river. It was a very wonderful place to grow up as a kid with interest in the outdoors, but it was also the times. Imagine being there in the late 1800s, 1890s, when Leopold was in his boyhood, and seeing the real dramatic changes going on in the Midwestern landscape at that time. The pine rafts coming down the Illinois, down the Mississippi River from northern Wisconsin and Minnesota, and seeing the changes in the prairie landscape and the depletion of wildlife population. So it was both the time and the place that really shaped Leopold's boyhood.
He worked as a forester and worked in the southwestern part of the United States. And that's where his ideas really started to take form. What did he take away from that part of his life?
Yeah, 15 years in the Wild West in Arizona and New Mexico. And he took away a lot from that. Sometimes we talk about the three W's of that period: his passion for wilderness areas and large undeveloped landscapes that he was able to experience at that time before the automobile came in, his interest in wildlife as it emerged and developed, and he would become one of the leading wildlife conservation experts and scientists of the 20th century, and then watersheds, his interest in how watersheds work in the landscape, and now that's so critical to us, especially in the agricultural Midwest, to understand how water works in our landscapes. So those are three of the real major themes that he brought back to the Midwest after he spent his formative years down in the Southwest.
And when he came back to the Midwest, what was he hoping to do with his life from that point? Because he had a new mission.
Yeah, at first he wasn't, it was unclear. He took a job, he was still in the Forest Service, and he took a pretty technical position here in Madison, Wisconsin at the, what's still the Forest Products Laboratory there. But it began after a few years to wear on him, and he decided to change his course and really devote himself to this particular interest in wildlife conservation, although at that point in history you would have talked more about game and game management. Later on in the 30s and 40s, he would shift his focus to that much broader spectrum of species and begin to use the word wildlife as we use it now. That change happens in the 1930s.
And he was an educator as well.
Yes. After a few years during the depths of the Depression, they worked out a plan for Leopold to join the faculty at the University of Wisconsin as the first professor of wildlife management in the country. And so he would spend the last 15 years of his career on faculty there and training the next, in fact, the first generation of wildlife scientists while becoming a major public figure and also beginning the writing that we now read in the Sand County Almanac.
Well, and writing was something that came to him later in life. When did he start writing and publishing?
Oh, boy. Well, he started writing. And going back to your first question, it really comes out of his childhood in Burlington. He had superb teachers, we learned from the archives, at the schools in Burlington. But it was also his mother's influence. She was keenly interested in Aldo's development, obviously, as a mother. But she also recognized, I think, this skill he had for writing. And so he began to compose hundreds and hundreds of letters when he went away to school out east. And that laid the foundation then for his constant writing. Beginning with his professional work in the Southwest, he was always writing. Sometimes it was journals, sometimes it was articles, reports, but it wasn't until much later on in his life, really. He was 50 years old, actually, when the first essays you read in the Sand County Almanac were composed.
And let's talk about that farm that he wrote about. It was a worn-out farm near the Wisconsin River, outside of Baraboo, Wisconsin. And he went there in 1935, and he was doing something that nobody else was doing anywhere, this ecological restoration. Tell me about it.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot going on at that time in his life. He is interested in restoration partly because of his work at the university, where the brand new University of Wisconsin Arboretum was established in 1934 with a mission of restoring the lost ecosystems, we would say now, of the Midwest, prairies, wetlands, woodlands, savannas. This became the mission of the Arboretum. Leopold carries that into his personal life when he acquires this piece of worn-out farmland along the Wisconsin River, not really well-suited for agriculture because of its sandy soils. But Leopold and his family, his students and friends, began the work of restoring that landscape now. And that process, by the way, still goes on every single day now under the auspices of the Aldo Leopold Foundation.
He was a prolific author then already of essays and things that were being published in professional journals and in popular magazines. But where did this idea for the book come from?
Well, the origin story kind of goes to the year 1937. That's the year that when you read the essays in the Almanac, it seems like Leopold sat down and wrote them and all at once. Well, actually, it's a compilation of essays written over many years. The first one was a little essay about the species of parrot in northern Mexico, the thick-billed parrot, and it's in the Almanac under the title Guacamaya, the Spanish word for that species. And that essay, published in a reputable scientific ornithology journal, garnered all kinds of praise from readers. And it wasn't, there's no science in it, it's no data, but the poetry captured readers. A second essay that year called Marshland Elegy about sandhill cranes, which were then on the brink of being extirpated from the Midwest, followed up. And so both these essays in 1937 began to show the world, and maybe Leopold himself, he had a new way of writing, a new way of explaining what's going on in the natural world through the lens of this new brand new science called ecology. And from that point on, he began to write more and more in that lyrical voice. And within a couple of years, he realized he had enough to think about a collection. And there's one more point I'd make, that a number of those essays, especially in the first part of the almanac, were actually written for Wisconsin farmers. They were first, in their first published form, appeared in a journal called Wisconsin Agriculturalist and Farmer. So it was often Wisconsin farmers who got the first chance to read some of this prose from Aldo Leopold.
He didn't actually live to see the book published. As I mentioned, it was published in 1949. He knew that it was going to be published, but then he died of a heart attack in 1948. So he didn't get to see this book published. Tell me how it was received, because for the first few years, it didn't make that much of a splash.
Yeah. Yeah, for published in the fall of 1949, and as you say, it did reasonably well, especially among conservationists of the time, who knew Leopold's work, who knew his professional contributions. But not too many broader audience readers were able to find the book at that point. And so for the first 20 years or so, it sold very modestly. But the real changing point came 50 years ago, right now. It was around the first Earth Day in 1970 that a mass paperback version was published. And that book went on to sell more than 1 million copies. And so that generation, those baby boom kids growing up and the environmental movement, modern environmental movement coming into being, really seized this book, and it became one of the key texts for the new wave of environmental concern.
And it has remained a must-read for generations now.
It has. It has. We're now, what, three generations into the history of the book, and every generation brings its own kind of, you know, eyes to the book, what it's looking for and the pieces they seize on. And it's fascinating to me, as one of those late baby boomers who picked up the book when I was in college, to see how different generations respond to different parts of Leopold's work.
We are talking about A Sand County Almanac by Aldo Leopold. Curtis Miney, a senior fellow at the Aldo Leopold Foundation and a Leopold biographer, will stay with us. Our other expert readers will join us in just a moment. This is the Talk of Iowa Book Club.
If you love this podcast, you should know that just like all the content produced by IPR, it's fueled by listener dollars. Hi, I'm Matt Alvarez, a talk show producer for Iowa Public Radio. Part of my job is talking with and connecting guests from all across Iowa to share their stories with listeners. When you contribute to IPR, you help make those connections. Membership contributions make up 57% of IPR's budget. That's huge. So, do your part to support the podcasts and programs you enjoy. Go to iowapublicradio.org and tap on the red donate button. Thank you.
It's the Talk of Iowa Book Club. I'm Charity Nebbe. We are talking about A Sand County Almanac by Aldo Leopold, first published in 1949. It has been in print ever since. Curtis Miney is here, senior fellow at the Aldo Leopold Foundation. And I want to introduce our other expert readers. Jim Pease is a wildlife biologist. He's also emeritus associate professor of natural resource ecology and management at Iowa State University. Hello, Jim.
Hi, Charity. Hi, Kurt.
And also with us today, Sylvia Secchi, Associate Professor in the Department of Geographical and Sustainability Sciences and the Public Policy Center at the University of Iowa. Hello, Sylvia.
I'm delighted to be here with you remotely.
Oh, well, very happy to have you with us. And I want to hear from all of you very briefly when you first encountered this book and in looking at it again, how it may have changed for you. And Sylvia, I'm going to go with you first. You grew up in Italy, so this is not necessarily part of your childhood, as it is for many Iowans. But tell me when you first encountered the book.
Well, I'm an Iowa State graduate, so I read the book first as a graduate student living in Ames. And it's amazing, you know, 20 years later, rereading it, having, you know, become a real economist, you know, how important Leopold's insights have been in agricultural economics, in environmental economics, and in ecological economics. So, like, looking back, you can truly see that his roots have spread, you know, and his lessons have been learned. You know, he talks about how economists don't know about lupines, but maybe he taught us something about lupines.
Absolutely. Jim, when did you first encounter Aldo Leopold? And I need to mention that you are a fellow Burlington boy. So Aldo Leopold was born in 1887. You were born many, many years later, but you both grew up in Burlington, Iowa.
Yeah, I was born the year that he died, but I grew up in Burlington and the Leopold family was a member of the First Congregational Church, and my family were members there as well, so I knew several members of the Leopold family, including Fred Leopold, Aldo's younger brother, and the Leopold Dust Company is there, and lots of Leopold connections, of course, in Burlington. I think it's taken Burlington some years to sort of recognize and accept that. That famous son of Burlington, but many of us, I think, accepted him long before that. In fact, he's buried there with the rest of his family in Aspen Grove Cemetery in Burlington.
Yeah, so you first encountered the book when you were in high school, right?
Yeah, I read it in high school. I don't remember if I read the whole thing or just parts of it, because to me, the way the edition, and I have an original edition of Sand County, the way it's put together, it's almost like a series of essays or short stories, if you will, and you can read different parts of it at different times that are relevant when you march through the various months of the year. Each one of those can be read and reread. For different reasons. And then when you get into the latter part of the book where he gets into the land ethic, that to me is sort of the culmination of all of those earlier experiences as build up in his mind. And you see his reflections on the three W's, as Kurt was talking about in the first part of the program: wilderness, wildlife, and watersheds. And I think it's quite an impact, I think, as you look at the book in total, but you can read it in small sections very easily, I think.
Well, and I found just rereading it for me this year during the spring, while I was rereading the book, we went from, you know, the cold, gray, frozen early March to this beautiful part of April, and it was so wonderful to read through those seasons in the almanac and experience it through Leopold's eyes, and also while I was experiencing that myself. Kurt, when did you mentioned that you first read the book when you were in college. Mm-hmm. What was your first impression, and then what brought you back?
One of my close high school friends who had gone to college in Montana had given me a copy. And I knew of Leopold's work a little, but the honest answer is that the first time I read it, I was, I enjoyed it, but I wasn't bowled over by it. And it took me a little while, but what did stick with me in particular was the idea that this scientist, this, hard, rational thinking scientist, could write such beautiful poetic prose. And the lesson of that for me was, we don't need to make these separations either in our college curricula or in our own hearts and minds, that combining of science and beauty and poetry, it all fits together. It can fit together. And that's the kind of the legacy that Leopold, I think, left the world, but it really touched me at that time in my college years.
And one of your favorite parts of the book, Kurt, is from the almanac part where the geese are returning. Mm. Tell me about that passage and why it's so meaningful to you.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. It's timely because it's the March essay, and we're just into April now. But and we've all watched our Canada geese come north again. And in this lovely passage at the end of the March essay, The Geese Return, Leopold describes the returning of geese from the southern part of the hemisphere to the north, all around the world. And so in the last part of the essay, he traces that migration route and actually says, you know, this has been going on for 15,000 years since the last ice age. And then in this final paragraph, it's pretty brief. If I can read it,
sure.
I will. This is the end of the March essay. By this international commerce of geese, the waste corn of Illinois is carried through the clouds to the Arctic tundras, there to combine with the waste sunlight of a nightless June to grow goslings for all the lands between. And then this annual barter of food for light and winter warmth for summer solitude, the whole continent receives as net profit a wild poem dropped from the murky skies upon the muds of March. I always love that essay because I like to say, I don't know if anyone's ever used the word mud more poetically than Leopold did right there. But it has a particular relevance for me because I had a chance a few years back to do some work up on Hudson Bay, which Leopold mentions in this passage, working with the Native Cree community up there. And that passage allowed me to make a connection between the Cree tradition, Native American tradition, First Nations in Canada, to this Leopold tradition, and noticing that the commonality there, despite different landscapes and cultural traditions, was this love of land and this appreciation of the wild things of the land. And so every time I read that essay now, I not only appreciate Leopold's prose, but I appreciate kind of how it wove itself into my own experience.
We have already Beanie on the line from Algona, and I want to bring him into the conversation. Hello, Beanie.
Hey, Charity. Greetings from Algona.
Thank you so much for calling. And you are a high school teacher?
I am. I teach high school biology at Bishop Garrigan here in Algona. And every fall, the public school, Algona High, the teacher Steve Young and I, we have a field day on the property of some philanthropists here in Algona. It's just beautiful. And the sophomores, every sophomore in the town of Algona spends the day outdoors on that field day. And there is a section on Aldo Leopold. So every sophomore in Algona still gets an introduction to who Aldo Leopold was as an island and the Sand County Almanac. And so I just want to let the listeners know out there, even though the baby boomer generation is, I'm at the tail end of that, we're still passing on Aldo Leopold to the youngsters.
Beanie, how do your students respond to Leopold? I'm sure that, you know, high school students, some of them don't engage too deeply, but I'll bet a few of them really, really grab onto it. What is it about it that really reaches them?
Well, I always try to pick out a few parts of the almanac that the kids really like. And one of those, since we have a lot of hunters here in Northern Iowa, I always try to pick out the section when Leopold is hunting in the southwest United States, and he and his crew in their younger days, they never miss an opportunity to pump some lead into a pack of wolves. And then as they fire on this pack of wolves, they get there just in time to see the light going out of the wolves' eyes. I think they call it a fierce green fire going out of the wolves' eyes. And some of the hunters in the section always recognize that part of the passage, and they get interested in Leopold then when they realize that he was an avid conservationist and a hunter. And then we go into the land ethic, but that's one section I use that kind of gets in touch with some of the students locally. And he does write a lot of things that they can identify with here in Northern Iowa. Like another favorite section is when he writes how there are still prairie plants that are hiding in far off sections of our local communities, like in the corners of cemeteries that never get mowed. And we have a local cemetery that has those very corners with some plants grown out of it that I always take my students to. So you can make connections, although they do struggle a little bit with his beautiful prose is being kind of lost in the younger generations who have a hard time deciphering it.
Yeah, well, maybe they'll come back to it when they're a little older.
Yeah,
and it'll feel different.
There is always a few who you can tell really liked it. And I buy a paperback copy for everyone in my ecology class here at Garrigan. And then we read bits and pieces of it throughout the semester. And then at the end of the semester, I always say, no, that book is yours to keep. If you want, you can keep it. If you don't want it, give it back to me. Let's not let it go to waste. And because the first time I ever had Sand County Almanac presented to me was at Iowa State University. A guy on my floor of the residence hall just gave it to me and said, hey, I think you'll like this book, and I don't want it back. Just pay it forward. And so I try to keep doing that to this day.
Beanie just mentioned a passage from the essay, Thinking Like a Mountain. And Jim Pease, I'd love to get your thoughts on that essay, because I know for a lot of people, this is the most powerful part of this collection. When Leopold reflects on killing a wolf and seeing that fire go out of her eyes.
Yeah, I think it is. It's certainly one of my favorite essays. It's interesting to me because I grew up from a non-hunting family. My grandfather hunted, but he never invited us. I was too young when he died to have gone hunting with him. And so I didn't learn to hunt until I was in college. And this essay actually helped me reflect upon this and several other essays, but this one in particular helped me reflect upon my role as a hunter in society. And I went into a department. In fact, I was transferred into the University of Wisconsin at Madison, into the department that Leopold founded. And most of my professors in that department were former graduate students of Otto Leopold, one generation later. And it's quite amazing to reflect with them when I was a undergraduate and a graduate student there, reflect with them on the role of hunting. And most of the other students in the department were hunters. I had not come from that background, but I learned to hunt, and still to this day love hunting and various aspects of it. But I think it has a very strong ethical component, and that essay, I think, crystallized for me and continues to sort of the importance of reflecting on your ethics and your role in the total biotic community as a hunter. And it's amazing to me that the previous caller had talked about this wonderful prose, and Kurt mentioned this as well. And I think it comes from the family. I mean, you're right, Charity. The prose is difficult, I think, for some high school students to wade through, because it makes references to the classics, all kinds of things in literature. And he was a wildlife biologist who was classically educated, and I think Kurt's referring to his mother as so important in an influence is a really important point. But that classical education gave him this wide variety of literature to draw from and to draw on in his own writing. And boy, he did it just so effectively so many times.
We are talking about A Sand County Almanac by Aldo Leopold. Three expert readers with me today, wildlife biologist Jim Pease, Curtis Miney, a Leopold biographer, and environmental economist Sylvia Secchi. We will be back in a moment. This is the Talk of Iowa Book Club.
If you love listening to Charity Nebbe's conversations on the Talk of Iowa Book Club podcast, you'll love hearing her other podcast, Talk of Iowa, too. She brings the same friendly tone, sense of humor, and empathy to all of her conversations. Subscribe to the Talk of Iowa podcast from Iowa Public Radio. You'll hear stories that will move you and explore topics that will help you better understand your neighbors and your community. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Talk of Iowa Book Club. I'm Charity Nebbe. We are talking about A Sand County Almanac by Aldo Leopold. Our three expert readers are Curtis Miney, senior fellow at the Aldo Leopold Foundation, Jim Pease, wildlife biologist and emeritus professor at Iowa State University, and Sylvia Secchi, an environmental economist at the University of Iowa. And Sylvia, I want to start with you. I want to talk about the land ethic portion of the book, because you said you were struck by how modern Leopold's land ethic sounds. And of course, we know that he is seen as the father of the land ethic and that this was written in the 1940s. But you feel like it sounds like it could be written today, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And, he was looking back at the Dust Bowl and all the policies that had been put in place to address the environmental issues caused by, unsustainable farming practices that his very own farm, right, suffered from. And a lot of the things he says, the role of the individual actor and the role of the government and how we have responsibilities and that cannot be delegated. And, he was a professor in the Ag Economics Department at Wisconsin, and he really talked about this issue of externalities, negative externalities, negative environmental impacts of our behavior and how we need to address them. And that's kind of very, very, pertinent to what we're going through now. So, sometimes I'm really struck that people say, oh, you know, this is new, it's a new problem. And then you read Leopold and, it's something that was already there, the issues related to industrial agriculture and overusing of natural resources were things that he was observing, and the consequences of that, both on people and the environment, things he was observing in the 30s and the 40s.
Absolutely. Well, and you mentioned earlier, we've learned a great deal from Leopold, but I mean, so many of the things that he said are the exact same arguments that we're having right now. Did you find that disheartening when you reread the book, Sylvia?
I actually a little bit of disheartening and heartening in the sense that I really saw his perspective as a system thinker and, trying to bring out this idea that this is a collective action problem and how we have to solve it together. That was great because that really resonated with me. And then, on the flip side, oh, but it's resonating with me because it's still pertinent that we haven't solved it. So his voice is so clear and beautiful and also belongs to the place. He really understands what's going on. That kind of watershed discussion we had before, he understands the place where he lives, and he understands the kind of like link between humans and the environment in such a beautiful way that is good to read. But yeah, it is disheartening a little bit to see that we haven't made that much progress in many respects.
Absolutely. And Kurt and Jim, I want to give both of you the opportunity to talk about this land ethic portion of the book as well. But Kurt, what do you want to add to thinking about his essays on the land ethic?
Well, very briefly, I'd say, yeah, that was kind of the culminating point of his own intellectual and even, you might say, spiritual development, was the essay you read in the Almanac. But the key point I always like to make when talking about it is Leopold understood that an ethic to guide our relations with each other and with the land, it never stops changing and growing and evolving. And so he says at the end of the essay, an ethic evolves in the minds of a thinking community. And so all of his readers are part of that community. All of us have that opportunity and responsibility to contribute to the continual evolution of this ethic and responding to the needs of our own times and our own places.
And Jim, I know that community concept is really important to you too.
Yeah, I think in the essay, in the part of the land ethic essay where it says the community concept, where he talks about the land ethic changing the boundaries of the what we call community to include soils, water, plants, and animals, or collectively the land. And he goes on to say, he said, in short, the land ethic changes the role of Homo sapiens, us, from conqueror of the land community to plain member and citizen of it. It implies a respect for his fellow members and also respect for the community as such. And that, to me, is sort of the key log statement of what a land ethic is. It's formed by humans, but it includes all the other members of the community, and certainly harkens back, I think, to sort of a Native American, at least some Native American land ethics as well.
He really didn't pull any punches in writing about the land ethic. He clearly delineated the difference between people who care about the land and value the land for itself and people who only value the land for its economic value. Jim, are you struck by how forthright he was with those arguments, with that language? Because I'm sure a lot of people were offended.
Oh, I'm sure. I can imagine. And Kurt would have more history on this than I would, but he doesn't pull any punches with, nor did many of his contemporaries, with either the agricultural or the urban community. And being in a college of agriculture at the University of Wisconsin, I'm sure that wasn't necessarily a popular theme among his contemporaries. Ding Darling here in Iowa, who actually hired Leopold to come in and do one of the first game surveys in Iowa history, was very similar. He didn't pull any punches as a political cartoonist. His conservation cartoons are just filled with virtual attacks on both urban communities as well as rural communities in a very agricultural state. I'm sure it wasn't comfortable at times for Ding or Aldo to travel around in some of those circles.
I think it is so interesting that the book is this blend of almost poetic description and these hard-hitting essays. Sylvia, as a reader, why do you think that makes the book maybe even more powerful to have both of those really disparate elements?
Well, as I said before, I think what really brings it home for me is that he knows the places that he's talking about, and he is really, I think that's his big achievement as a scholar, that he understands that the humanities and the sciences are one and the same when we talk about the way we relate to the environment. And so being at the University of Iowa right now, I'm thinking about the writer's workshop and, you know, how we express our passion and how we send the message, tell our stories as scientists. I think he had found a very effective rhetorical device in, you know, transmitting that information. And I'm saying this, and it sounds really, you know, kind of like not very poetic. He really was able to convey the message in a way that gets to your heartstrings. And he knew the place and loved the place that he was talking about and understood the issues at such a deep level. I think that's what really makes the book so beloved, because we can really see that he is a scientist, but he's also a person who loves what he is studying. He's a scholar and a humanist, and I think that's his greatest achievement.
And I want to ask each one of you just very briefly, there's so much environmental material out there now. There are so many books we can read and documentaries we can watch and things that inform us and galvanize us and make us feel passionately about the land. Why read Leopold today? Jim, I'll let you go first.
Well, for me, it's a matter of knowing one's history and from whence we came, and the previous generation of Leopold and Darling and Paul Arrington, who was another Leopold student, Teddy Roosevelt, Gifford Pinchot, they all just together had so much influence on where we are today as a society, both ethically and environmentally. And I think it's important to understand that history. Those who fail to understand that history think that they'll constantly reinvent the wheel. We can go forward from there, but certainly we need to understand where they're from.
Yeah. Sylvia, what are your thoughts? Why read Leopold today?
I agree with Jim that those who don't know their history are destined to repeat it. And Leopold is really important in understanding that, but it's also so beautiful. And so we're learning, but we're enjoying that learning process as well.
And Kurt, you get the final word on that subject.
Oh, boy. Well, for me, why we need and continue to read Leopold is because he makes that connection between you, the reader, and the place you are. And it doesn't just have to be a wild or remote or rural place. It can be any place from the city to the wilderness. But he helps to make that connection by helping you to see the world in this new way that ecology provides. So I'll give Leopold the last word. And this was what he said to his own students in one of his late lectures. He was paused and asked, why are we even taking this class? And you might say, why are we even reading these essays? And so his line to his own students was, once you learn to read the land, I have no fear of what you will do to it or with it. And I know many pleasant things it will do to you. And so by building that connection, we not only can help to build toward a more sustainable future, but we also can take pleasure and joy in understanding our relationships in this big world.
Well, Kurt Meine, thank you so much for being here today.
It's such a pleasure. Thank you so much for featuring Leopold in the Almanac.
Sylvia Secchi, thank you.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
And Jim Pease, thank you very much.
Thanks, Charity. It was great fun.
We've been talking about A Sand County Almanac by Aldo Leopold. This is the Talk of Iowa Book Club. I'm Charity Nebbe. The Talk of Iowa Book Club podcast is produced by Caitlin Harrop and edited by Monica Starr. We get technical support from Dennis Reese, and our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. This podcast is a production of Iowa Public Radio.
The way Iowans consume news has changed a lot since the coronavirus pandemic hit in 2020. But people here still need to know what's going on in the state every day. What are leaders saying?
The virus isn't going away until we have a vaccine.
How are medical professionals reacting, and how is it affecting hospital staff and schools?
Those weekends where you are on the phone and sending emails and, you know, dealing with people with a very emotional issue has been really hard.
I'm Clay Masters. In 2021, Iowa Public Radio is starting a podcast called Here First. It's a quick daily show for your work week that catches you up on state news as you begin your day. Get analysis from IPR's team of reporters.
Most of the improvement in the unemployment picture comes from more than 90,000 Iowans no longer looking for work.
Find out when high-profile politicians are in the state.
Back at the state fair!
Learn about what's going on in state government and discover Iowans you might not hear about otherwise.
This is the first time I have spoken with a woman without documents who's also unafraid of sharing her story on the radio.
Subscribe to Iowa Public Radio's Here First wherever you get your podcasts.